Part 2. And Not a Mere Device. Outside the tavern, the night was lighted by a rocking yellow moon that held a white star in its horn. In the gloomy castle on the hill, a lantern gleamed and darkened, came and went, as if the gaunt duke stalked from room to room, stabbing bats and spiders, killing mice.
"Dazzle the duke with jewels," the minstrel said aloud. "There's something in it somewhere, but what it is and where I cannot think."
He wondered if the duke would order him to cause a fall of purple snow, or make a table out of sawdust, or merely slit him from his goggle to his zatch, and say to Sarah Linda,
"There he lies, your latest fool, a nameless minstrel. I'll have my varlets feed him to the geese."
The minstrel shuddered in the moonlight, wondering where his zatch and goggle were. He wondered how and why and when he could invade the castle. A duke was never known to ask a ragged minstrel to his table, or set a task for him to do, or let him meet a princess.
"I'll think of some way,"
thought the prince.
"I'll think of something."
The hour was late, and revelers began to reel and stagger home from inns and taverns, none in rags and none in tags, and some in velvet gowns. One third of the dogs in town began to bark. The minstrel took his lute from his shoulder and improvised a song. He had thought of something.
"Hark, hark, the dogs do bark, but only one in three. They bark at those in velvet gowns, they never bark at me."
A tale-teller tottering home to bed laughed at the song, and troublemakers and tosspots began to gather and listen.
"The duke is fond of velvet gowns, he'll ask you all to tea, but I'm in rags and I'm in tags, he'll never send for me."
The townspeople crowded around the minstrel, laughing and cheering.
"He's a bold one, Rags is, making songs about the duke,"
giggled a strutfurrow who had joined the crowd. The minstrel went on singing.
"Hark, hark, the dogs do bark. The duke is fond of kittens. He likes to take their insides out and use their fur for mittens."
The crowd fell silent in awe and wonder, for the townspeople knew the duke had slain 11 men for merely staring at his hands, hands that were gloved in velvet gloves, bright with rubies and with diamonds. Fearing to be seen in the doomed and desperate company of the mad minstrel, the revelers slunk off to their homes to tell their wives. Only the traveler, who thought he had seen the singer some otherwhere in time, lingered to warn him of his peril.
"I've seen you shining in the lists,"
he said,
"or toppling knights in battle, or breaking men in two like crackers. You must be Tristram's son, or Lancelot's. Or are you Tyne or Tora?"
"A wandering minstrel I,"
the minstrel said.
"A thing of shreds and zatches."
He bit his tongue in consternation at the slip it made.
"Even if you were the mighty Zorn of Zorna,"
said the man,
"you could not escape the fury of the duke. He'll slit you from your goggle to your zatch, from here to here."
He touched the minstrel's stomach and his throat.
"I now know what to guard,"
the minstrel sighed. A black figure in velvet mask and hood and cloak disappeared behind a tree.
"The cold duke's spy-in-chief,"
the traveler said.
"A man named Whisper. Tomorrow he will die."
The minstrel waited.
"He'll die because, to name your sins, you'll have to mention mittens. I leave at once for other lands, since I have mentioned mittens."
He sighed.
"You'll never live to wed his niece. You'll only die to feed his geese. Goodbye, good night, and sorry."
The traveler vanished like a fly in the mouth of a frog, and the minstrel was left alone in the dark, deserted street. Somewhere a clock dropped a stony chime into the night. The minstrel began to sing again. A soft finger touched his shoulder, and he turned to see a little man smiling in the moonlight. He wore an indescribable hat. His eyes were wide and astonished, as if everything were happening for the first time, and he had a dark, describable beard.
"If you have nothing better than your songs,"
he said,
"you are somewhat less than much, and only a little more than anything."
"I manage in my fashion,"
the minstrel said, and he strung his lute and sang.
"Hark, hark, the dogs do bark, the cravens are going to bed. Some will rise and greet the sun, but Whisper will be dead."
The old man lost his smile.
"Who are you?"
the minstrel asked.
"I am the Golux,"
said the Golux proudly.
"The only Golux in the world, and not a mere device."
"You resemble one,"
the minstrel said,
"as Sarah Linda resembles the rose."
"I resemble only half the things I say I don't,"
the Golux said.
"The other half resemble me."
He sighed.
"I must always be on hand when people are in peril."
"My peril is my own,"
the minstrel said.
"Half of it is yours, and half is Sarah Linda's."
"I hadn't thought of that,"
the minstrel said.
I place my faith in you, and where you lead, I follow.
Not so fast,
the Golik said.
Half the places I have been to never were. I make things up. Half the things I say are there cannot be found. When I was young, I told a tale of buried gold, and men from leagues around dug in the woods. I dug myself.
But why?
I thought the tale of treasure might be true.
You said you made it up.
I know I did, but then I didn't know I had. I forget things, too.
The minstrel felt a vague uncertainty.
I make mistakes, but I am on the side of good,
the Golik said.
By accident and happen chance. I had high hopes of being evil when I was 2, but in my youth I came upon a firefly burning in a spider's web. I saved the victim's life.
The fireflies? Said the minstrel.
The spiders. The blinking arsonist had set the web on fire.
The minstrel's uncertainty increased, but as he thought to slip away, a deep bell sounded in the castle, and many lights appeared, and voices shouted orders and commands. A stream of lanterns started flowing down the darkness.
The Duke has heard your songs,
the Golik said.
The fat is in the fire, the die is cast, the jig is up, the goose is cooked, and the cat is out of the bag.
My hour has struck,
the minstrel said. They heard a faint and distant rasping sound, as if a blade of steel were being sharpened on a stone.
The Duke prepares to feed you to his geese,
the Golik said.
We must invent a tale to stay his hand.
What manner of tale?
The minstrel asked.
A tale,
the Golik said.
To make the Duke believe that slaying you would light a light in someone else's heart. He hates a light in people's hearts. So, you must say, a certain prince and princess can't be wed until the evening of the second day after the Duke has fed you to his geese.
I wish you would not keep saying that,
the minstrel said.
The tale sounds true,
the Golik said,
and very like a witch's spell. The Duke has awe of witch's spells. I'm certain he will stay his hand, I think.
The sound of tramping feet came near and nearer. The iron guards of the Duke closed in, their lanterns gleaming and their spears and armor.
Halt!
There was a clang and clanking.
Do not arrest my friend,
the youth implored.
What friend?
The captain growled. The minstrel looked around him and about, but there was no one there. A guard guffawed and said,
Maybe he's seen the Goluks.
There isn't any Goluks. I have been to school and know,
the captain said. The minstrel's uncertainty increased again.
Fall in,
the captain bawled.
Dress up that line.
You heard him. Dress it up,
the sergeant said. They marched the minstrel to the dungeon in the castle. A stream of lantern light flowed slowly up the hill.